Good afternoon. Thank you for joining At the Root of It. This is Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting out of Roberto's studio, and this is Aaron Fitzpatrick. Today at 4 p.m., the 6th of October already. In latest news, the renowned Rhone producer Nicolas Jaboulet is set to release his first wine from a new joint venture with the Perrin family of Chateau Beaucastel, one of the leading properties in Chateau Neuf-du-Pape. The new venture will see limited quantity wines released under the Nicolas Jaboulet Perrin Frère label. Marc Perrin, one of the four Perrin brothers who are working jointly on the project with the Jaboulets, told Decanter.com, "We have been interested in Northern Rhone for a long time, but wanted to keep it separate from our Southern Rhone business. I imagine this to be a very good venture in the future together." In the market feed, Betts and Scholl, the boutique winery founded by master sommelier Richard Betts and art collector Dennis Scholl, has been sold to spirits company Castle Brands for $1.1 million plus 7.14 million shares of the corporation. As part of the deal, Betts and Scholl will join the company, with Betts heading up Castle Brands' new wine division as vice president. And I've recently reported that the German government was going to be building a bridge over the Mosel region in Germany, and would let you know if there's anything that you can do as listeners to stop this. At the website www.bundeskanzlerin.de, that's bundeskanzlerin.de, you can voice your opinions to help stop the building of this bridge to Federal Chancellor Angela Merkel. So I encourage you all to do that. I'll be doing it the same. And for the crop report, we're going to take the crop report direct to our guest today, Joe Macari from Macari Vineyards in Long Island's North Fork. So we'll be right back after this short break with Joe.
Γαλάζοπράσινος, γαλάζοπράσινος γυαλός, αμάν γυαλός. Γαλάζοπράσινος γυαλός, τα μάτια σου βρυχάτε. Γαλάζοπράσινος γυαλός, τα μάτια σου βρυχάτε.
Welcome back to At the Root of It. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. A quick thank you to our sponsor, TechServe, our Mac specialist friends on 23rd Street. And a big welcome to our guest this afternoon, Joe Macari from Macari Vineyards. Hi, Joe. You there?
Hi, Aaron. How you doing? Nice to be with you.
Good. Thanks so much for calling in. I know it's harvest time and quite busy there your way, so I appreciate the time you're taking to talk with us this afternoon.
My pleasure. It's actually one of the first days of harvest.
What are you harvesting today?
We're harvesting a little Sauvignon Blanc as we speak.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah.
It's a little cold today. Did the earlier weather this week, which was warmer last week, did that help with the respect to the ripeness levels of the grapes?
Yeah, we really should wait a little bit, but what we're going to do is we're going to pick in two segments. We'll pick a little bit today to retain some of the acidity, and then we'll pick, I'd like to let it hang for another week and a half. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, what's the forecast looking like?
What's that?
What's the forecast looking like out there?
It's going to be rain Saturday. So
Yeah. So probably good idea to pick a bit now then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. So I know in preparation for this call today, I had given you some thoughts about a question that we'd like to ask you today, because there's so many of us dream about owning a vineyard. And obviously, I'd like to get a little bit of your background for our listeners as well. But the dream of owning a vineyard and the reality of the situation in Long Island and how to go about looking or speccing for a vineyard site, can you speak a little bit about that for our listeners today and your background and how you got there?
Sure, I would love to. It's definitely outrageous and a great thing to own a vineyard. But you'll soon realize that it's 24/7 work. Mm-hmm. It's basically farming. I mean, it is farming,
right?
And the work is never done. Some of the things about Long Island is that you have some great things that you have vintage variation every year, and you make some incredible wine. Mm-hmm. And then some years are a disappointment, but you know, mostly you make some really beautiful food wines, a little lower in alcohol, obviously. It's a short season,
right?
But it's very challenging. And some of the things I've learned about the farming out here is actually coming from the city, moving out here, we've learned a lot about the soil and a lot about the food that we eat also. Not only growing the grapes, but learning about the soil is probably one of the best things that I've ever done in my life, because I've learned to love, you know, Mother Earth and composting and knowing where my food comes from, which all ties into heritage.
That's very true. It sure does.
Ties into slow food. And, you know, we raise our animals on our farm. So we have a little different setup than other people. We really believe in having the animals on the farm and using the manures back into the soil. But as far as, you know,
so you're not practicing biodynamics per se, but you're using a lot of biodynamic natural kind of resources in your wine production.
We have very, you know, I've learned from people like Alan York and Jim Fetzer, and I've been to many seminars with Nikolai Jolie.
Uh-huh.
And basically we've been burying horns for about 8-9 years, and the horn manure we use. So we have enlivened the soil, and we brought the place back to life. There's a lot of life force and energy. We still are conventional.
Right.
We still spray. But
you're doing a lot of other things that work with the agricultural.
We're spraying silica also as we speak. On the reds, we're spraying silica, mm-hmm. which what it does, it increases photosynthesis on the leaves, and you ripen a lot better. So
for the animals, though, I mean, is silica, just for our listeners, what exactly is that kind of spray?
Silica is from quartz crystal,
mm-hmm.
and it's ground, it's pulverized, and it's stirred in the stirring machine for an hour for life force, and then it's sprayed up into the air, and it rains down on the leaves. So it's actually microscopic crystals, quartz crystals, that magnify the light.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's really, you know, scientifically proven. But also when you stir it, you get life force from the cosmos. And what you're trying to do is reconnect your earthly forces with your
heavenly forces. So as far as sprays go, it's more natural along the lines of...
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Biodynamic spray, right.
Right, okay.
So we are conventional here, though.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned is, you know, you're on your own land, and you're gonna, every farmer's different. You're going to treat it the way you want to treat it. We haven't used any chemical fertilizers in 12 years, and we haven't used any herbicide underneath the vine.
That's great.
So it's very expensive to do that on certain years like this year,
mm-hmm.
but it's also very rewarding to know that you're not putting gramoxin and simazine or even Roundup on your soil.
Yeah.
So these are the things that I really got out of learning about farming in general,
mm-hmm.
and learning to eat good food, that, you know, the slow food movement is a great thing for people to learn, because most people eat a lot of processed foods.
Very true.
And I think everyone should learn how to compost, and everyone should learn how to grow their own food. So
that is something to work to. So for the people who are dreaming of owning land one day, cultivating a vineyard or vines and other agricultural products, there's something very rewarding about that source from, you know, the farm to the table, and that's what slow food goes back to. So it's wonderful that you have the opportunity to do that in your life.
It is very
even
wonderful.
As much work as it is.
Yeah, it's good. It's good work,
mm-hmm.
when you do all the, you know, I believe that every, you know, you're not a farm unless you're composting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my opinion, and that's really rewarding. Also, the composting.
So are you a second generation vintner, or did you buy, did your family buy the vineyard that you're on now from another vineyard? Or,
well, actually, we have, right now we have 440 acres. 200 of these acres were bought in 64 with an idea to do cluster housing. And actually, he wanted, my father wanted to do a little vineyard, some housing, and maybe a golf course.
Oh, and, wow. So cluster housing is exactly what?
Just cul-de-sac housing. You know, just houses. Just,
oh, I see, I know. See. Okay, so a little community of a small...
Little communities,
yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm glad that didn't happen, and the land was sitting here for all those years, and I moved out from Queens. I'm a Queens boy.
Okay, shout out to Queens.
I'm a wino from Queens, running a winery, and what we did was we moved out in 89, and I was driving into Queens to work every day, and that got boring.
Uh-huh.
So I looked into the vineyard business, since I loved Italian wines at that time. I was only really into Italian wines.
Okay.
And we started researching, and in 95, we planted 40 or 67 acres in 95, and I think we planted another 40 acres in 96.
Wow. Well, so what industry were you in before wine?
Real estate and construction.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then as far as doing the spec sightings for actual vineyard purchase, what were the different factors that you were considering before making the purchase for the land?
Well, this piece of land, and I hope you come out soon, it's very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of natural kettle holes from the glacier. It's got wooded areas, and it's not 100% flat, which is nice. It's got some slopes, which we call Matatuck Hills.
Uh-huh.
So there are, you know, it's basically, there's a lot of land out here that's flat, which is okay too, but I like the diversity in the land, and it, you know, especially the slopes are really nice to plant on. And
they get different sun exposure based on the different slopes as well?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Different sun, different wind, and it's great here. You're in between the waters, and the breeze always comes up and dries the morning dew. So there's a lot of great things about planting, especially the sand, the soil, the water just pre-draining. The water doesn't, the roots don't stay wet, you know, so that's really nice.
So did you help along with somebody else that was a vineyard manager in the past? Did you bring someone else to help spec the land for you?
Well, there is at that time, I think there was only one service here, and he's still here, and he's a great viticulturalist. Stephen Mudd surveyed the land for us.
Okay.
And he's a grower, and he's also manages several vineyards. But we also, you know, we brought him in, and we brought a lot of people from overseas, from France. We had a winemaker from Spain. We had Alan York, which is one of the top people in biodynamics, come in.
Okay.
And teach me about the soils.
Wonderful.
And composting.
And there were no vines. There were no vines on the land before you purchased it. They're all new vines.
Right. No vine.
Okay.
Nothing. Yes.
Got
and did a lot of cover cropping in between the rows of different crops for diversity. And now we're up to 200 acres and 440 acres of property on 2,800 feet on the water, which is really, really nice.
Wonderful. So you get the climactic factors of the breezes and the sun, and, just the general terroir. You were saying the soil is quite rich. So those are three things that I think anyone who wanted to purchase land or plant vines would certainly have to consider. So,
well, also, it's a peninsula. It's sand. I believe, obviously, the composting has brought a lot of life back into the soil.
Uh-huh, a lot of richness.
And that's really what I do, so.
Well, great, we're going to...
I hope you could get out here and take a look.
I will love to, absolutely. I'm going to break for a moment, so please stay on the line, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to At the Root of It. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you to our guest this afternoon, Joe Macari, who is from Macari Vineyards in Long Island's North Fork. And today we're talking a bit about the dream of owning a vineyard and then breaking down the process of surveying the land and analyzing Long Island as a good place to be able to grow grapes. And as Joe was mentioning, he's using very natural ways in terms of cultivating the land and the additional agriculture that grows on the property. So we're going to pick up from where we left off, Joe.
Okay.
And also give our listeners a better feel for the different grape varietals that you have planted and any new ones that you are looking to plant, what you've found has really been able to thrive in the Long Island environment.
Okay. Well, when I first started, obviously Merlot and Chardonnay were king.
Mm-hmm.
And they still are, because Merlot loves to grow here. It grows great. The thing is, there's a lot of Merlot on Long Island, so people get interested when you have a different varietal. We have 4 acres of Syrah.
Oh, wow.
Which is coming really, really nice. We only had 2 vintages in 7 or 8 years because of the deer and the birds.
Mm-hmm.
It's right by the woods, and it gets eaten every year.
Why, they like the sweetness of the Syrah grapes, or is it just where it's located?
Well, no, as soon as the grapes start to get ripe, a little sugar, the
mm-hmm.
deer go to town.
Yep.
So, and the birds also do a lot of damage. But anyway, Syrah is outrageous here. And also Malbec is another one, two varietals most people don't know that are on the island.
Sure.
And one of my favorites also is Cab Franc. We have about 20 acres of Cab Franc. And we do a very good job with the Cab Franc, and it's great for blending. It's also great as a varietal.
Definitely. Yeah, I think Long Island is coming on strong with the Cab Franc for sure. And
yeah.
I noticed the Malbec. When was the first vintage that you released that?
Of the Malbec, we always used to just get a little bit, so we blended it with our wine called Bergen Road, which is a blend.
Uh-huh.
We only blended maybe 2%, 4%. But 05 was our first vintage of 100% Malbec, and it sold out like in 3 months. It was gone. We only had a couple hundred cases. A
couple hundred. I was going to say a small production.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Usually we make 800 to 1,000 cases of each varietal. The Malbec, we made a couple of hundred. Syrah, I think we made 150. And 07 is our second vintage, which we have Syrah and Malbec that's not even out yet.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't release it yet, so I'd love you to try it.
Definitely. Now, with respect to going back, the factors to consider with the land, we covered that. Going forward, when you started developing the business, did you find that there were challenges in general with Long Island, or is there a good community out there to work with in getting the wine around town?
Yeah, the community is great. The people are great. And it's the people that, I mean, obviously, I might be doing a little things differently than other people, but we're all for the same goal, to make the great, make really great wine. I really don't want to be a farm winery where people just come out, tourists come out and buy all your wine. I'm always challenging myself with world wine and trying to put myself, meet different people and sommeliers and, chefs and expose my wine and see where it stands in the world. And definitely Long Island has a place as a region in the whole world. And that's what makes me happy,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to just be a little farm stand selling wine. It's a very serious thing to me. And, Severino from Bottega del Vino told me once that wine has no borders, and truly that's the way the world should be, with no borders, and wine brings people together.
Absolutely.
And also
yeah.
the slow food movement and restaurants, I mean, obviously it's a great life to eat and drink your way through life.
Yeah.
But
So we have a good community, and then you have a chief winemaker there that
community.
I imagine is really
yeah.
overseeing the cellar. You have a chief in the winery. You have a chief winemaker and assistant winemaker as well, or
we have 2 winemakers. One is from Austria, Hal McDangle.
Okay,
and he's in charge of. We do some early wine, like an Austrian style, like a young vine, and we also do ice wine, which we're in America, so we freeze it in the freezer instead of. It will not freeze on the vine. It will rot
right,
first.
Right, it's not cold enough, so that's called cider extraction.
Yeah, so couple hundred cases of that, not a lot, big production, because it's not an ice wine region. But the wine, when you make ice wine from French vinifera, it's unbelievable. It's
beautiful. Had it. It's very nice.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah. And our other winemaker is Paola Valverde, who's from Chile. And she's been coming back and forth for 7 years. We just got her a visa this year. She'll be here for 2 years straight instead of going back and forth.
Great.
And she does our reds, and she does a really great job on our Sauvignon Blanc, which is not also another great varietal out here, is the Sauvignon Blanc.
Definitely.
And we just
How's it looking
it
this
over.
Year? Besides, you're picking some now, then you'll blend the rest after you pick it next week?
Well, yeah, we'll make two separate tanks, maybe two different yeasts. One will be a little riper than the other one, but the first one will help us retain the acidity that we need. We love high acid whites, and I make the wine the way I like to drink it. So,
well, it's your I'd hope so. I'd hope you would.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch gears here, and also, as we had spoken in the past, you're also tending to bees, and we serve your honey at the restaurant I work at, the Waverly Inn, with our cheese plate, which is
nice.
Just wonderful. And I wanted
Thank you so much.
For sure. I want to just, I know it's a big movement these days. Everyone is wanting to make their own honey, and obviously it's for another cause, which is to keep the bee population thriving. So how long have you been producing your own honey?
Well, I've been learning about it for 6-7 years, and we've been, you know, we went from 2 hives to 4 hives, 6 hives, 12, and we went from like 14 to 80. And now we have 80 this year. And
80 hives?
80 hives.
Wow.
I have them in two locations. I have a farm next to my vineyard, which is 100 acres not planted. And I try to keep them away from the sprays. And but obviously bees go wherever they want, and they travel up to 5 miles to get their food source. So,
have you found that challenging? Because I know my, I have to say, my father actually found 2 hives in his backyard and started cultivating the and learning about it with a mentor, a bee mentor. And just a couple weeks ago, we had 2 robber bees come in, and all now there's nothing.
Well, you have the yellow jacks. You have other bees robbing the hive. But this year, because June was 26 days of rain and clouds.
Yep.
They weren't able to get out. And after that, they started swarming. So they basically lost, you know, the hives that swarmed lost 2 months. And to recover from that, it's impossible in a short season like this.
For so production, this for production-wise, you're saying.
Yeah, this will be the first year that I'm going to be feeding the bees for the winter. And I don't believe in feeding the bees. I like them to... I like to give them, leave them enough honey for themselves, and I don't like to feed them at all, but I really have to feed them this year just so they'll survive the winter. And whatever they get now in October from the goldenrod, I'm going to leave that, you know, for them also. So
well,
it's a great thing to worry about. The bees are so, we don't realize how close they are to us, and they're all about love. And the bees, if they die, we die, and...
Do you think that the word that they're going to become extinct within a couple of years, and a lot of people have been talking about just the crisis, is it as real as we think? Or
yeah, it is definitely real, but I have a lot of faith in mankind here, and I think there's so many people on board helping them, and basically they're the direct relation between us and nature, and they're telling us, they're saying, you're killing us, but you're killing yourself. That's exactly what they're saying. So we have to really look at what we spray and what we put on our lawns, and everybody could help out with this. And you know, it's very important. Even if everybody plants a tree or plants a flower, it means something. And just your intention, if it's in the right spot for the bees, even if you're not working with them, if you have the right intention and you know, maybe say a prayer for them or maybe just think about them once a day, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, New Yorkers
not only
and
about
people...
them, but it's about us also, because we're really hurting ourselves, you know, especially with the farming and the food that we eat. And it's also affecting the bees. So,
Well, I know New Yorkers are a little bit more limited in their ability to do that, but they've been planting green roofs as often as possible. There's a nice movement in that direction as well. So
I think that's great, yeah.
Well, you have to come out to, I'll promise to come out to visit Macari, and you'll have to do the same here at Roberta's. We have a nice little green roof on top of the studio. And for any listeners who'd like to find out more about your wine, what is your website?
MacariWines.com.
Macari Wines, so M-A-C-A-R-I,
yes.
Wines.com, and you also take tours. You were giving one earlier this morning, and can find your wines all over
South Africa.
Yeah.
We have two winemakers from South Africa just popped in,
and
always love to show them. Yeah, it's a great thing.
It's great when your wine is getting around the world, too. Notice of your wine. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for joining. We have to wrap up this afternoon, but it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much, Aaron, and I appreciate all you're trying to do, and you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you so much. You are too. Okay.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. And thank you, our listeners, for joining today. I'm going to wrap up this afternoon's segment and give a quick a thank you to our engineer and producer Lorenzo Reggioneri and Nat Wiener, and our sponsor TechServe. See you next week. Thanks.